Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 102. And this episode is very specific, so it's not going to apply to a number of people who listen to this. This episode is for some friends of mine in Boulder who have a new puppy. Happens to be, I think, a pointing lab, but I'm not sure that that's really a factor here. This podcast is going to be for them and for people like them who are getting a dog, and particularly a kind of a dog bred for something, a bred that has a purpose in it, that is not going to be competed, they're not going to hunt with it, they're not going to do, you know, a lot of the stuff that other people get these dogs for. And so what do you do when you have one of these guys and you're not going to go play the games with them? How does that change, or does it change what you do to raise them? What's the best way to go about raising one of these dogs? So I'm going to discuss that. And it applies not just to, I'm going to specifically be talking about retrievers here, but this sort of goes for if you're getting a, and I see this a lot, if people are getting a, let's say a border collie or an Australian shepherd, those guys are super intense dogs too, very much bred with a purpose. And then, they just look cool and have really cool hair and stuff. And so they just have them sit around the house. And sometimes that works fine. And sometimes it's a problem. And pointing breeds, all that kind of stuff. If you have dogs that were bred fairly strongly to believe that they serve a ultimate purpose here on the earth, and you aren't going to be, that's not the main reason that you have them, then there's things that you need to do to make sure that you allow that dog to be who it is and yet have that fit into your system. So I'm going to talk about a few of those things. Hope it helps, you know, people that just want to have a regular dog, but they have this really cool thing, and so we need to get everybody on the same page. First, like I've done a number of times in here, the podcast on the walk, I don't care if you got a Chihuahua puppy, or a Norwegian Elkhound, or certainly any of the sporting breeds and working breeds. If particularly when you get those, then the walk is going to be a real integral part of your training, and I've gone into great detail on that. So every day, preferably every day, a little easier right now for people that are stuck at home and aren't having to work. If you go out every day in a real natural environment, and this includes the Norwegian Elkhounds and the Chihuahuas, so you go onto their territory, Mother Earth, right, and you do your walk for, I'd hope half hour or even longer if you had the time, depending on the ability of the dog to, one, be able to physically carry out that long of a walk, and two, if they're old enough to do it. So if they're too young, they just don't have it. And as they get older, the time goes longer. And all the things of the walk, which that's where you teach a dog that you're the center of the universe there, and that they stay with you, and that they always remain aware of you and focused on you, and they come when you call. And basically you establish on their level a real intimate, strong connection. Okay, that's very, very important. Now, let's take the whole, that's, you know, half hour, hour out of a day. What about the rest of the time, and what things can you do? Just like performance dogs, right? Just like dogs, if you're going to go try to get a field champion on this, or you're going to go hunting, you know, in Argentina with your animal, regardless of what you're going to do, one of the things you want to develop in this dog is responsiveness. And I wrote ad length in my book about that is perhaps the single most important thing. By responsiveness, what I mean is they are aware of you, just like what you're trying to do when you take the walk with them. They're out there having a blast, smelling stuff, eating stuff, running through stuff, experiencing all kinds of things, but they need to have an awareness on you. And so it's the same way everywhere else. I didn't say you have little obedience champions. I did not say that this is like being in the Marines. But you want a dog that is responsive to you 24 hours out of the day. And so you need to go into this with that in mind. Okay? Again, Chihuahua puppy, Norwegian Elkhound. I don't care what it is. It's what the goal is that you want a dog when you're around the house and you walk in the room Okay, that's important to them. You're there. And then they wait to see, are you just going to go over and sit on the couch and watch 10,000 more hours of Netflix? Or are you putting on your shoes to go outside? Right? So they watch and they see that and then they respond. If you sit down on the couch, then they just stay where they are. If you go over to get your shoes, we're up and ready to go, whether they're going or not. But you want that kind of thing. You also want, you know, you're fixing dinner and you have some company or somebody's over or something and you need them to go outside. So you call them and say, you know, come here, Fang. And they go, oh, what? You're calling? And they go outside. And I mean, I don't care. 3-month-old puppy, 3-year-old dog. Same thing. That's responsiveness. They are aware of you and they are aware of what you want and they cooperate. Not because you've made them or forced them, but because you've created this way of life. The way you do that first is to be aware of it. To be, if you go in and have and pay no attention to the dog, don't know if it's there, don't know what it's doing, can't tell what it's, and you tune the dog out, then that's what you're teaching. You're teaching the dog to just tune you out. So you have to, one, tune in if that's what you want your dog to do. So when you walk in the house and the puppy's laying over there, the dog, and you want them to just stay there, then make sure that you're quiet. Make sure that you sit down. Make sure you don't call them over. Don't make, you know, just let them, if they are. Mostly they're going to come running over to you. But if you want them to not, one, be aware of what they're doing, respond to it. If you'd like them to be calm, then keep the calm going. If you want to get their attention because y'all are going to take off and go outside, then go in there, say their name, you know, get their attention, and then involve them with what you're doing. So you just create the situation that you want by yourself being aware of it. And if you call the dog and say, let's go, we're going to go out in the backyard, and they just don't respond or they go the other way, all right? Now, they're responding to you, but it's not the way that you want. So what you want to do is you need little Fang to go out with you. Just go wherever Fang went, pick him up, take him outside. So in other words, what you wanted to have happen, happened. That's like the podcast I did just a little while ago on how do I get my dog not to do this? Is by never letting them learn what not to do. Just show them what to do. So you're going to do that right here. That's, your interactions are real important. Now, when there's kids around, they cannot be that way. Some are. Some are just intuitively real good, and some are not. And so you can't make sure that you can't have the kids be the way that you're going to be. But what you do need to do is make sure that you and that dog have that kind of understanding all the time so that that remains in place. To the best of your ability, get your kids to cooperate with you. The best way when you have kids, before I get into a few more specifics, the best way when you have kids is not to, just like with a dog, don't tell them all this stuff not to do. No, don't do that with the dog. Stop doing that with the dog. Don't you dare do this. That there is nothing worse to do in that relationship between the puppy and the dog and the kids than to make it a big thing where they can just get in trouble all the time. Dogs don't do thrive under that, and then it's no fun. You know, you get this dog so it can be part of the family. The best thing to do when you have kids with any kind of dog for any purpose is to make them a part of the building, training, teaching process. So depending on their age, little tiny ones, not so much, you know, but they can't do much damage either by barking out commands and not enforcing them. But make them like, okay, well, let's go. You help me get the dog ready to go do this. Or if you have a little retriever, okay, I'm going to hold the little retriever and then you throw its little puppy bumper for me. And then I'll get it to come back. Make them a part of things. Make them watch you to make sure you're not messing up. I love that one. Anytime I've done that with when there's a family and I've been training the dog, I'll tell the kids, now watch your mom for this. Make sure your dad doesn't do that. A lot of times that gives them a little accountability and maybe even a little authority on stuff. And so they're a little bit more a part of it. You got to make them understand that you guys are all doing this with the puppy, just like everyone in their classroom, whether it's preschool or grade school or whatever, that just like everybody there is working in the same direction so that this kid is equipped for life, they are now going to be part of the staff that's helping make this puppy be an awesome dog that they'll have for the rest of that dog's life. Real good approach for the kids. Make them a part of it. Give them some management stuff. You know, let them be the ones that feed, or let them be the ones that let it out and clean up the backyard or something. And then make sure that they make sure other people are doing the right thing. Involve the kids in a positive, proactive way. Now, training stuff. So we want, the first thing we want is that relationship. We want the connection, and we want the responsiveness. You to the dog and the dog to you. That's important. Now, as opposed to what if you go to the local PetSmart and take their evening, Tuesday evening, I don't think they have those right now, but the little obedience classes with the big bucket full of treats. And they teach the dog that if you do what I say, you get something tasty. Okay, that'd be the same as if your kid went to kindergarten and every time they did the drawing right or did the reading right or whatever, you know, they got a Snickers bar. Most parents would not be for that for a number of reasons. One of the worst things about treat training, and I'm sure there's places, fearful dogs it works, is that you make food be a very important part of their life. And it shouldn't be. Food should be, like for any athlete in the world, it should be a source of nutrition and energy, not pleasure, not reward. And so when you start really young doing this treat stuff, because shoot, that dog will do anything if they're food driven, right? For especially retriever people, they really like that. Now you make food a big deal. And everything you do, they're looking for what's in it for me. And that is something you do not have to have. If you don't know, you know, if you don't want to kind of bear down and learn how to teach interactions, then use the treats. But then if you don't have treats, then maybe they don't have to do stuff. I know the reasoning. I've had it explained to me many times. You teach them a kind of a pattern behavior with the treat and then slowly remove the treat. And probably sometimes that works. You don't have to teach a pattern behavior at all. You can just teach them to be responsive to the word that you say. Don't ask them to do anything they're not old enough to understand. So let's just get into the basic obedience stuff. So when you have little puppies, if you do, okay, then you have to have, I would do some leash work on them, particularly if you live in town, right? But I would put on their little, depending on their age and their little neck. Now, little retriever guys, you can put a little, I don't put choke chains on little guys, but you can put a little collar that's firm enough that it doesn't come over their head. And then go ahead and attach, you know, make a little leash, a hook, you know, just a, not a heavy one, just a nice leash, the kind that you get any store. And just teach them in the beginning. And I mean, in the beginning, I'd say you can start at 10, 12 weeks. Just teach them, okay, we're just going to walk down the driveway or down the path or whatever, and you're going to be on the end of this thing. And some are going to comply, and some will fight like this is to the death, and everything in between. And you don't respond, and you don't get crazy, and you don't make them be like they're going to be when they're 6 months old. You just teach them, you know, you just walk with me. Now, they might, there's every reaction in the world. There's compliance. There's just, I'm going to lay down and not move because I don't know what this is, so I'm just not going to do it. And then there's like terror where they're jumping and screaming and rolling and twisting and whatever response they have, they have. What you want to do is just remain very calm. Go, wow, look at that. We better not do this in front of the neighbors. And go down further away to the park or wherever you can get. And just teach that dog, you just got to walk along with me. So if they go nutso, right, don't let them control the situation. If they flip around, I've had this so many times, upside down, roll, and it's like, gotta, or scream. Sometimes they scream. That's why you don't want to do this right in the, you know, where all the neighbors are watching you, because they'll call somebody. They act like you're just, I mean, just destroying them. So don't respond to that. It just, when they're flipping around, wait it out till they kind of calm down. Maybe they, a lot of times they just throw themselves on their back and just, boom, I'm dead. I can't, you know, I just use a little jerk on the leash and get them back on their feet. And I don't give up. I just stay calm and we're going to move. And once they find out that the drama and the histrionics and the insanity doesn't work, then they go along with you. And they might go along for, you know, a minute or two, and then, boom, we're going to have it all again. Whatever it is, it's going to take you a couple days at best. And you just go, all right, whatever you want to do, Bubba, you're just going to walk at the end of this leash somewhere with me. Okay, so that's goal number one. Then after a few days, when they are doing that, now we're going to kind of get them on one side. Generally, if you're right-handed, you have the dog on the left side so that your right hand's free, right? But pick a side. And then everyone use the same side. And then teach him, all right, you're going to walk over here on my left side. And over the next few weeks at most, you can teach him, okay, you're just going to walk along here with me and be on this left side. And actually, when you do it, it's a lot of fun. Right? And then you still want to do, this isn't the walk now. The walk is off leash, out loose. This is beginning your obedience. So you're going to have him on there and just, and use a word. Now, dogs do not, especially puppies, they don't have a big vocabulary. You can teach them a big vocabulary, but that's unnecessary and has a lot of downsides. So convention is, you can do whatever you want. Convention is that heel means be at my left side. So you give the command once, heel, in regular voice. We don't have to have drill sergeant voice. Have the voice that you would like the dog to respond to for the rest of its life and use that. So if you'd like to be able to say heel at that level, then say heel now. You have the leash to enforce it. And just have them walk at your side. Make sure they begin to associate the word heel with, oh, I'm over at your left side. That's all it means. It means be at my left side if I'm walking forwards, if I'm walking backwards. If you're 10 yards away and I say heel, that means come over to my left side. Right now, we're going to keep it simple. We're just going to be walking along and saying heel. Do not say heel over and over and over, because then you become background noise. So the dog, if you got a little sharp dog, then let's keep them real sharp. So tell them heel, get them over at your left side, and then go. Don't keep saying it again and again and again. People think they make an association. They do, but not the one you think. Right? Heel, they're at your left side. If they suddenly kind of take off over somewhere else, and they're on the leash now, so they just move away, just say heel, bring them back. So that simplicity and not a lot of chatter. I tell you, you can say heel and the little dog will start walking with you. When they'll do that, now we can teach sit. So you have the leash on and they're at your side and you say sit. You pull up on the leash, on their little neck, not up off the ground, but just pull up and push their bottom down. Now, in the beginning, they can do all kinds of things. They can act like you're just torturing them something horrible, or they can just go along with you, or anything in between. You have control, especially if you have a puppy. Pull up on the leash, say the word sit, pull up on the leash, let them hear it first, because then they begin to associate. Whenever I hear that person say sit, I have to drop my bottom. So sit, pull up on the leash, push down on the bottom. Keep them in the spot. Do not let them turn this into a wrestling match. You know, that's why it's good to start this little guy. Sit, push the bottom down, hold it there. Nice. Then go ahead and heel, and then sit, pull up on the leash, push their bottom down. Once they begin to understand what it is, we don't keep doing the nicey-nice, pull up on the leash, push, because they like your hands on them. Remember, puppies love contact. Contact means love. We're not wanting love right now. We're wanting to push the bottom down so they understand that's what they have to do. So you work to get them. So when you say sit, now I can just pull up a leash on the leash and they know to sit down. Do not. You have control of this. Do not let them learn to sit slowly. Do not let them learn to move away from you and sit. Do not let them learn that they can move a little bit before they do it. Sit, bottom down. That's the kind of synapse path you want. Everything that you do. Once you can do that, and that usually takes a couple days, and they'll go along for like 20 or 30 or 40 seconds or even a minute and understand, and then their mind is empty. They don't remember sin anymore. So that's part of the deal. So don't do this kind of work, especially on a youngster, any longer than maybe 2 minutes, maybe three. Really. More just teaches them to endure this. And we don't want them to have to think that about anything we're asking them. So just do it for a fairly short period of time. End on a win. Make sure it's not unpleasant. We're not punishing. We are ahead of them and making sure that they do whatever it is they need to do. Sit or walk with me. The next thing is the here command. You can use any command you want. Generally, field people and retriever people, they use the command here because that is a more natural thing. You know, you'd say to get over here. Out in the field, you don't go, come, Fang. You know, it's like, Fang, here. So here is generally the word people use, but you can use anything you're comfortable with. So you teach this the same way you tell them to sit, right? And then you step just in front of them because they're going to want to walk with you. So you say, sit again. And you step right in front of them. And then you've got the leash and you say the word here. And then you pull them toward you. Not like you're reeling in a fish pull, but a little bit of a jerk here until they begin to understand here. And then have them sit in front of you. So here and then sit. And then after you can do that, then you can, when they're sitting in front of you, you can teach them heel to come around to your left side, not behind you. I know most obedience things teach that because they're easier to line up straight if they come around you from behind. So in a kind of a clockwise deal, don't do that. And when they're sitting in front of you, tell them heel and teach them, take a step back with your left leg and then forward and teach them to walk around so that you have them in your sight the whole time and teach them to be straight. When they go behind you, you lose sight for a while, you disconnect, and you can do it either way. I like to just make sure I can see them all the time. So you can just work on that, and you start at 10 or 12 weeks. By the time this dog's 5 months old, you can walk right down the street and heel and sit on a leash, and the dog's going to be great. Even if something happens in the middle, even in a little puppy, you're over there teaching it to heel and pushing its bottom down, and here comes a kid running across something, still make the dog sit. Make sure right now from the beginning you learn when I tell you you have to do this, even when there's cool stuff's happening, little puppy, you still have to sit. Now, you can use stay if you'd like. It's a little bit redundant in the obedience stuff because when you say sit, that means to sit until I tell you something else. Stay's real good in the house, like stay in your bed or stay on the rug. Okay, use that however you wish, but teach that with the same clarity. When you hear that word, you're done until I give you something else to do or release you. So keep that real clear in your mind, not because you're going to be, obedience champions, but because you want to have extreme clarity and good communication between you and this dog. Okay, so that's another thing that's good. Now, if you have, for the working dogs, I'm going to bring in this. So you have a working dog, but you're not going to be working the dog in the stuff. It's important to understand, right, that this dog is motivated to do something, motivated to contribute. And for pet dogs, this is probably one of the biggest problems people have stem from not identifying this and not addressing it. So if you got somebody got an Australian Shepherd or somebody got, a Drathar or a German Shorthair or a Retriever, and these dogs have within them the desire to contribute and to work, then you have to give them a place to contribute and to work and to feel like they are a part of a system that's greater than themselves, if that makes sense, just like we do. So this dog, particularly when you have dogs with a high intelligence, like most of these retrievers, right? There's a very high IQ dog right here, generally. Not always, but generally. So you have, it's just like if you had a kid that was very intelligent and very athletic and you just let them watch Disney Channel all day long. Something bad's going to happen. Plus, it's a waste of something. So when you have an animal like that, that one means that you want some structure in the day. Not hard and fast, but structure. Like this is where you sleep, particularly a puppy. And then the first thing you do is you go out and you do your thing, and then you come, and you have a structure so they understand, and they can fit into that, and that's a really good feeling for a dog, just like it is kids. Kids do better with some reasonable structure than none at all. So you want that. Two, you want that walk so that we have a place where this dog can do what it's meant to do, and that is to move over the ground and to experience things and to look for things. And this goes for the cow dogs and the working dogs, the German kind of guys that have their deal. The exercise is probably one of the key things. In the beginning with little guys, it's a walk. Later on, it needs to become a run, you know, a structured walk, a bike ride, something where they go out, and it's not a turn you loose deal. The puppy walk is. But later on, they need to have a thing. You know, if you're training for a half marathon and you go out and run 6 to 10 miles, this little dog can do it with you. Have it at your side, at the heel position. And I don't care what else is going on. Birds flying by, dogs running around, horns honking. It's right at your left side. Teach it from the beginning, and you'll always have that. That structure right there is going to be really important. And then another part of what's really important for retrievers is, if you have a retriever, let it do some retrieving. Do not use that for its exercise, right? Because then they get, that's not what it's for. Just go out maybe, you know, in the morning, maybe at the end of your walk or sometime, and then in the evening, and throw two or three retrieves. So the dog's always perfect. Just always perfect. Just goes out, brings it back to you. But just do a couple. The temptation is, particularly when they like to retrieve, is to do 12 or 15 or 20 of them because the dog loves it so much. That's not a good thing. Just like an athlete. If an athlete really wants to be a really good swimmer, then we don't let them swim 8 hours a day. They do not do that, right? Because it's optimum for them to get the optimum amount of training. And then there's rest, and then there's other parts of their life. So the more you retrieve, the better is not true. Do just two or three at each session, not more than two sessions a day. So the dog always does it right, always anticipates it. And then as they get older, you know, you can do some frisbee stuff. You can make like fun stuff out of it. People can throw far away. There's all kinds of things to do. But right now, just get them where they do their thing, because they retrieving is just an autonomic thing they have. They don't even know what they're doing. And it's very makes them feel very good. And as they get bigger and older and better, you have to make the retrieves more challenging, just like anything else. Not the same thing out in the backyard, because that'll be boring. So the retrieving for the bird dog stuff, you know, those guys, the running thing is a big deal. You have to give them the walk out in the field is a really big deal. So you have to put that into there as well. I'm going to talk just a little bit about just general behavior. So this is my opinion now, but I've had a lot of dogs and a lot of pets, dogs that weren't functional guys. One, no bad behavior should be tolerated. They should never put their teeth on anybody. And you should do whatever it takes to convince that little dog that putting its teeth on somebody is not okay. Just like its mother would do. So if you have little puppies, I don't care whether they're dingoes, coyotes, or puppies, or dogs. When a little puppy does something to its mom that it doesn't like, mom corrects it severely right off the bat, and the puppy goes, "I'm not gonna bite her in the lip anymore." So you have to do whatever it takes. You know, usually rolling very unceremoniously across the floor after biting somebody, but don't do the thing. Don't do. Yeah, there's all like lay them on their back. I don't ever gently lay a dog on the back after it bit me. When it bit me, it wishes it didn't. So do whatever within your comfort zone. But teeth on anybody can be stopped within a day or two or three. It just, you have to, when the dog tells you that doesn't mean anything, whatever you did to try and stop me, then find something that does. That's the answer to that. The same thing with barking. Barking just to hear themselves make noise is unacceptable, not only to you, but anyone that lives around you. So if you have a little yapper, again, just like with the biting, do whatever it takes, teach them, man. You are not going to. It's fine if they bark because someone came to the door or walked by, because that's a nice aspect to have. But just barking because they saw a squirrel can be very problematic. So right in the bat, whatever stuff they're doing that's bad, you have to stop. Now, these little guys have to chew on stuff, and they will chew on stuff for a long time. So the nice thing to be would be give them something to chew on, as opposed to them using the leather couch or the side of the wall or your faucet outside. Give them, you know, if you need to, and I know these are just little guys, get a knuckle bone at the butcher's. You know, they can't really eat. I mean, that's tasty, so they're going to leave the wall or the sprinkler system alone if that thing's out there. So give them stuff to chew on. Whatever they're retrieving, just have their retrieve thing. So when they see that, they get very serious. I would not have kids play retrieving, you know, and kids, mine never were a problem with that. So I know you can do it. Just say, no, that's really not good. You know, and let them be a part of walking on a leash and teaching some of those kind of things, or throwing the puppy bumper for you. But just, and it, have a crate. Every dog on the planet Earth should be crate trained. So one, let's say you have, right now we're not having people over, but let's say when we do and your kids bring their friends over, then in the beginning, teach your dog, you know, okay, you're going to go in the crate right now because we can't have you in the middle of everything. Have that crate be a great place. That's where they'll travel. You know, that's where they'll rest. That's where they'll have quiet time. Crates are really good when you come back from the walk. You know, and they water up and whatever, and the, or you've done some, a little bit of obedience training, then put them in the crate so that what they just did can steep in. You don't want to go for the walk, then do some obedience, then we're going to throw some stuff, and then the kids are going to play from you with you. That's too much. That's too much for an adult dog. Certainly too much for a puppy. So you want to make sure every activity that you undertake with these guys is singular. So you do the walk. Right, then maybe have breakfast and then rest. And then when you're going to go do your little hilarious puppy obedience, which is going to just be a few minutes, let them have a drink of water, put them in a crate. Let that stuff just steep in. Crates are not punishment. It's just quiet time. And dogs take to it extremely well. A lot of dogs, you know, they'll just go sleep in it. When nothing's going on, that's just a real nice place for them. If a dog has any issue with a crate, then feed them in there. That'll make the crate really awesome. Or toss a little biscuit in there before you put them in. So there's always, in the beginning, before they know, it's a real positive thing. So, summarizing, the walk, super important on puppies, every puppy all of any kind. Two, make sure on the little guys, based on their neck strength and their physique, that you teach them early on, you're going to walk on a leash. And as soon as they learn that, then we're going to teach heel, and then we're going to teach sit, and that's where we teach here. Now, you can continue to expand that as they get older, and there's, you know, I have things on that, information on that, but we're just going to get them started there. So we spend this whole time with this puppy, teaching it, this is how your life is, and this is what we want from you, and this is what we do, and this is what you do. And kids can be involved productively, proactively, as a part of building this dog, not because don't do this and don't do that. If you can, keep your voice calm all the time, because then if you, you know, talk softly and carry a big stick, then talk softly is all you'll ever have to do to have this dog respond. So don't try to make it, the one last thing, don't ultimately, you know, whatever you want this dog to be, oh, I want him to go hiking with us, and I want him to do this and that. So don't go there yet. You know, just like in an athletic thing. Gee, I want to run, you know, an Ironman, right? Or I want to go to the Tour de France. So I'm going to start riding my bike up the mountains right now. No, that'll come in time. You just start with the fundamentals and get in that little dog's head what it is you want and just slowly build. And when you begin to do that with a dog, then you kind of begin to see how ultimately this is going to make things really awesome. And when you are doing the fun stuff, the runs and the hikes and the family visits and all that, this dog already knows exactly what its role is. And it listens and understands everything that you say. So you don't have to go teach it out there. So go back with the fundamentals of all of that before you go to the Tour de France, all right? Just basics first. So I hope that helps. And it goes with all these breeds. The big running dogs, those of you guys that have big running dogs that are pets, you're going to have to let them get the big run out of them, not by dropping them behind the truck and, you know, running through the forest, but by getting into their head and getting into their, you know, exercise, structured exercise. And I'll leave you this one thought, particularly when you have intelligent, purpose-driven little dogs. You will exhaust the dog. You will take more out of them energy-wise and every other way when you do things that make them think rather than when you do things where they're just running, right? That, I mean, that flies in what seems obvious, but it'd just be like I used to make analogies in college. when you come out of your final exam of the hardest class you ever had, you are more exhausted on a complete way than you are after you ran a half marathon. You are, because the brain is not even working. It's just exhausted. The best thing to do with dogs, little guys, is to make them think, because that's hard and it takes a lot of energy. So that's the biggest energy drainer and calmer downer of a dog that there is activities in which they need to think. Not where you tell them what to do, not where you do all the work, but where you require them to think. So keep that in mind really strongly. And my next podcast, we'll be maybe back on some of the more performance stuff, but I hope that helps you guys. I look forward to getting in contact with you and maybe meeting that puppy someday.